Hello, welcome to everyone gathered here today and to everyone watching or listening online. If you would please turn in your Bibles to Matthew chapter 20, and we are going today to read one of Jesus' parables beginning in verse 1, Matthew chapter 20, verse 1. This is what Jesus says. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire workers for his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius, and that would be about a fair day's wage. He agreed to pay them a fair day's wage for the day and sent them into the vineyard. About 9 in the morning, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, "You also go and work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever's right." So they went. Then he went out again about noon and then about 3 in the afternoon and did the same thing. About 5 in the afternoon, he went out and found still others standing around. He asked them, "Why have you been standing here all day long doing nothing?" "Because no one has hired us," they answered. And he said to them, "You also go and work in my vineyard." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first." And the workers who were hired about 5 in the afternoon came, and each received a fair day's wage. So when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more. But each of them also received a fair day's wage. When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. "These who were hired last worked only 1 hour," they said, "and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day." But the landowner answered one of them, "I am not being unfair to you, friend. Friendo, didn't you agree to work for a fair day's wage? Take your pay and go. I want to give the one who was hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I'm generous?" And then Jesus adds, "So the last will be first, and the first will be last." Angus Fletcher is a professor of story science. Doesn't that sound like a fun gig? A professor of story science. What that means is he's an expert in how different kinds of stories impact us in the way we think and feel and behave. He studies stories' psychological, even neurological impact on how we respond, our behavior to the story. And he's written this neat little book called Wonderworks. It's actually not little, it's quite thick. It's a fascinating book, Wonderworks. And in that book, in one chapter, he talks about two different kinds of fairy tales. And the first kind of fairy tale he talks about is what he calls the poetic justice fairy tale, or the poetic justice story. And in a poetic justice story, good things happen to good people, and bad things happen to bad people. Poetic justice stories encourage virtues of hard work and industriousness and wisdom by showing in the story how those who possess these qualities, in the end, they are rewarded and they live happily ever after. Fletcher cites as a prime example of a poetic justice story the fairy tale of Cinderella. Because in the end, It's the good-hearted, hard-working Cinderella who is rewarded, not her wicked stepsisters. The other type of fairy tale is what Fletcher calls the lucky twist story. And the lucky twist story, as you can imagine, works in the exact opposite of the poetic justice story. In a lucky twist story, good things happen to fools. Fortune comes upon the undeserving. Fletcher cites an obscure fairy tale called Adamantina and the Doll, in which this poor, foolish girl, Adamantina, spends her food money, and she doesn't have much to spend. She spends her food money on a worthless rag doll. And of course, that rag doll turns out to be magic. And then after much hijinks, and fair warning, if you choose to look this story up, it's an earthy kind of story told long ago in the tradition of the Canterbury Tales. There's some crass elements here. But after much hijinks, this magic doll helps Adamantina become a queen. And she lives happily ever after, but not because she's wise or industrious or hardworking, but because she is a lucky fool. And the reason Fletcher has to cite an obscure fairy tale, likely that none of us have ever heard of before, is because in our culture, the more popular, the more familiar, the more ready for the Disney movie treatment fairy tales are the poetic justice stories. Why is that? Because centuries ago, those who write and edit and curate fairy tales decided that lucky twist stories communicate the wrong message to children. We do not want our children to grow up thinking they can be foolish, they could be lazy, they could not work hard and still be rewarded. No, that's the wrong virtue, the wrong value. And so those who compiled fairy tales, they preserved and promoted the poetic justice stories where good people get the good they deserve and bad people get the bad they deserve. Some of those lucky twist fairy tales, the ancient fairy tales, were rewritten into poetic justice fairy tales. Now, it occurs to me that the teacher in Ecclesiastes, sorry to bring him back up again, but he has been on my mind a lot lately. The teacher in Ecclesiastes is upset, he's despairing, because he was raised to believe he was living in a poetic justice story, where good leads to good, bad leads to bad, wisdom leads to life, and folly leads to death. Do the right thing, you'll be happy. Do the wrong thing, and you'll be miserable. And yet, what the teacher says he observes unfolding all around him is a lucky twist story. What he sees happening all around him are fools enjoying the fruit of other people's hard work, other people's wisdom, other people's skill. And he's worried that some fool will someday enjoy the fruit of all his toil and hard work and skill. And this upsets him to no end because he wants, more than anything, he wants to live in a poetic justice story where the outcome equals the input, where the reward, the gain, the profit is commensurate with the effort, the hard work, and the toil. Which makes me wonder, how do you think the teacher in Ecclesiastes would feel about Jesus' parable that we just read? I assume he would feel the same way those who were hired at the beginning of the day felt when they learned that those who worked only an hour in the cool of the day while the shades were long got the same wage. I assume he would have something in common with those who were hired first. While Jesus' parable is not quite a lucky twist story, it is far from a poetic justice story, isn't it? Where everyone gets exactly what they deserve. Most scholars and everyday readers who read this parable are quick to point out how ridiculous, how impractical, how outrageous and unreasonable Jesus' parable is. Years ago, I was teaching this parable in a Bible class, and an older retired gentleman blurted out, "That's no way to run a business." And everyone squirmed. Can you say that to Jesus? Sorry, Jesus, you don't know anything about business. Recently read an article about a CEO of a startup in the UK who experimented with paying all of his employees in the company. Every single employee was paid the same salary. Now, this story is not to be confused with a CEO in Seattle who cut his salary in order to raise all of his employees to a minimum salary of 70K. That's a different situation and a different experiment. In this case, with the startup in the UK, where everyone was paid the same, no matter your experience, your expertise, your seniority, everyone was paid the same, the article said the CEO had to abandon the experiment within a year because of the rancor it created among his employees. It simply did not work. That is no way to run a business. And so while Jesus may not be giving us business advice in this parable, he's doing something. He's challenging something at work within us. And one of the elements he seems to be challenging at work within us is our propensity to want to establish our value and worth as human beings by comparing ourselves to others. Notice in the parable when those who went to work first learned that those who went to work last were paid the same wage, they say to the landowner, what's their complaint? They say in verse 12, you made them equal to us. You made them equal to us, even though we're the ones who did all the hard work. We're the ones who had to work in the heat of the day, and yet you're treating them the same way you're treating us. You're making them equal to us. The landowner's generosity in this story equalizes all the many different ways we may try as human beings to differentiate or set ourselves apart from each other. But in this story, it doesn't matter how long you've been working in the vineyard. It doesn't matter how hard you've been working in the vineyard. It doesn't matter how skillful your work in the vineyard is. At the end of the day, in this particular vineyard, this particular landowner wants and goes out of his way to make sure that everyone in his vineyard receives a daily wage. And instead of celebrating the landowner's surprising generosity so that their neighbors could buy their daily bread instead of going home hungry, those who were hired first grumble. Not because they were paid less than they were promised. They got exactly what the landowner said he would pay them. They grumble because they see other people around them getting more than they deserve. The landowner's generosity, the landowner's grace, if we can call it that, is not amazing to them. It's offensive and irritating. They thought they were living in a poetic justice story where a day's work gets a day's wage, where the outcome equals the input. But instead, they learned they're living in a lucky twist story. And isn't it funny how it's always those who are hired first? It's those who are picked first, for whatever reason, who knows why. But it's those who got there first who want to live in the poetic justice story. And that's a relatively small group compared to all the others who don't seem to mind living in a lucky twist story where they receive more than they deserve. This is no way to run a business. But Jesus says this is exactly what the kingdom of heaven is like. Now, how we title this parable shapes the way we read it. In most translations, we call this parable the parable of the workers in the vineyard. But as soon as we call it that, and that title did not come from Jesus, it did not come from Matthew, it came from the editors who put together our translations and included headings and subheadings in our Bible. As soon as we read that title, it shifts our focus to the workers in the vineyard, the workers. What about the workers? And we have all of these questions about the workers. This is about the workers. Who are the workers? What was it about those workers that were hired first? And what was wrong with those who weren't hired first? And what about those who were hired last that couldn't get a job all day long? Were they late? Were they lazy? Were they old? Were they injured? Were they incapable? Were they incompetent? And on and on and on. And we're focused on the workers, the workers, the workers. But notice how the parable begins. Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who goes out and hires some workers. This is not a story about the workers. This is a story about the landowner. What kind of person is the landowner? One writer suggests a much better title for this parable. So we call it the parable of the eccentric employer. I think one of the reasons we don't call it that is hard to say. Eccentric employer. But it's the parable of the crazy boss. It's the parable of the generous landowner. This is not a story about a small group of hardworking laborers who at the end of the day complain about their pay. This is a story about a landowner who keeps going back into town to invite more and more people to work in his vineyard. The kingdom of heaven is like a generous landowner who makes sure that as many people as possible are working in his vineyard, and then makes sure that everyone in his vineyard, no matter when they arrived, are taken care of. The kingdom of heaven is like a gracious landowner who treats everyone in the vineyard as if they've been there all day long. In his book about the science of story, Fletcher describes how, based on research, actually neurological research, that when you read a poetic justice story, now they are valuable for communicating the virtues and the values of conventional wisdom, but when you read a poetic justice story when you're down and out, when things aren't going well for you, when bad things are happening to you, that poetic justice story sends you into a spiral of depression and despair, because what is that story teaching you? Well, the bad things are happening to you because you're a bad person. And this leads to what Fletcher calls catastrophizing. Well, if bad things are happening to me, my life is not going well right now, and I'm a bad person, then likely things are only going to get worse because I can never be a good enough person to get out of this pit, this mess I'm in. And he says, poetic justice stories, while the intent behind them is noble and good, they actually can have a detrimental effect on people who are struggling. He says, the lucky twist story, the story that all the fairy tale editors wanted to get rid of because it communicates the wrong message, lucky twist stories, they lift your spirits. They communicate a sense of hope. Because what a fairy twist or a lucky twist fairy tale story does is remind us that no matter how bad things are right now, and even if they're bad because we've gotten ourselves in a terrible mess, something good can unexpectedly come in our lives and change everything. And it's not based on what we do. It's based on who keeps coming into town looking for people to work in his vineyard. The kingdom of heaven is not powered by poetic justice. It's not fueled by human performance. The kingdom of heaven is not a meritocracy in which only the deserving are rewarded. The engine that propels the kingdom of heaven forward is the surprising generosity and the amazing grace of a God who keeps inviting us to work in his vineyard and then keeps giving us way more than we deserve. So let's celebrate today. Not the lucky twist in this story, but the gospel twist in it. A twist that reveals, in the words of Jesus, that the first will be last and the last will be first. Which in this story means anyone. And I mean anyone. Anyone can respond to God's invitation to come work in the vineyard and show up at any time of the day and be blessed, including you and me.